Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Receiving this message. We are Ken Jennings and John Roderick. We speak to you from our present, which we can only assume is your distant past, the turbulent time that was the early 21st century.
Fearing the great cataclysm that will surely befall our civilization, we began this monumental reference of strange and obscure human knowledge. These recordings represent our attempt to compile and preserve wonders and esoterica that would otherwise be lost.
So whether you're listening from an advanced civilization or have just reinvented the technology to decrypt our transmissions, this is our legacy to you.
This is our time capsule. This is the Omnibus.
You have accessed entry 1433.PR2603. Certificate number 38550. Winamp.
Winamp. Winamp. It really whips the llama's ass.
I remember Winamp, but I don't remember what it does.
Is that,
or did.
Does that count as remembering something?
I'm not sure. I remember...
Like, if you were given a list of random combinations of six-letter words, you would know that Winamp was a thing?
Yeah, yeah, right. If this was one of those Donald Trump IQ tests where it was like, which of these are words? I would go, Winamp. I mean, it's not a word, but it is a thing. I mean, I'm in the music business, and Winamp has amp in it.
It was a music product, although amp did not derive directly from amplifier.
Oh, well, then what the hell?
It was kind of a backronym. I hate those when they make, you know, Patriot Act be the preserving America's, yeah, whatever it was.
This can't be yogurt.
Yeah. Wait, except that one's real.
Oh, but it was this country's best yogurt what they changed it to.
But TCBY is not some amazing thing you would triangulate on and then reverse engineer a phrase for.
Yeah, right.
But what? I'm just saying I don't like it when they start with the acronym and then they figure out, okay, the bad guys are going to be called Cobra. That sounds badass. Covert operatives beating Russian ass or whatever.
So many of them are just bad words. I mean, Cobra is awesome, but a lot of them are,
especially in politics, when it's like we're going to pass the family law, or we're going to pass the sane law. Then you know it's going to be something terrible.
What I'm mad about is that when they take Kentucky Fried Chicken and take the words out, it's just like, now it's just KFC. Don't ask too many questions.
And that's very common. Like the abbreviation will officially be nothing. Yeah. You know, like for all I know, I think AT&T might stand for nothing now. And we're like, no, it's not. It's the American Telephone and Telegraph or whatever. Yeah. Nope. Since 1988, by corporate dictum,
it has
stood for AT&T. You were just telling me that your computer is old.
It is. I'm really trying to goose this. It's a Macintosh. Let's just stipulate that. So don't try and send me any viruses.
We are dueling across this table as we often do.
We are.
I'm a PC. John's a Mac.
That's right. And it couldn't be more like right out of a commercial. Why don't we get that commercial, you and me? Where I'm like, ha, what day is it?
I just did Justin Long's podcast yesterday.
Oh, he's a nice guy.
Nicest possible guy.
Yeah.
And he was like, I said something, and he was like, you remind me of John Hodgman. And I was like, that's a double-edged sword of a compliment. Oh, do you know what it was?
What?
I said I liked Diet Dr. Pepper. And he was like, you know who loves Diet Dr. Pepper? John Hodgman. And I did not know that.
As the person who introduced you to John Hodgman and has seen the two of you interact multiple times.
Correct.
I can confirm that you are not alike. And you both to both recognize that you're not alike.
Like, is it a point of pride for both of us that we are not alike?
Well, no. What's funny is, you know, John is America's smartest boy, and it's very frustrating to him when he's in the room with you, who is also America's smartest boy.
Except I'm not real. I mean,
well, but that's the thing. You say that. Oh, I'm not really.
Because it was a game show.
Which drives him crazy.
Oh, I see.
Because you don't care about being America's smartest boy. And that's the worst thing America's smartest boy can do.
Next time I see him, I'm going to carry one of those blue ribbons they put on pigs or jelly jars. And I'm just going to put it on his chest with no explanation and be like,
you're America's smartest boy.
Good to see you.
Yeah, no, that's not going to work. It's just like the five times you've met Ben Gibbard and only recognized him twice. It really gets inside his head.
I am now up to 2-2 on Ben Gibbard. I'm batting 500.
Okay. Yeah. So you've recognized him twice, and two times you've said, you want me to sign something for you, kid? You've thrown your jersey to him, and he's like, we actually know each other.
But to get back to your Mac, it's an elderly Mac.
Yes. This Mac, I'm goosing it along, and it's almost 10 years old. And that's not what you're supposed to do with computers, I don't think.
You almost have a computer older than your child, and that's it's very close, and that's not normal anymore because people just replace their phone every 8 months.
The thing is that the child will always be older than the computer, even 20 years from now.
Correct.
Because I bought the computer after I had...
The computer's not catching up.
When I had a tiny little baby, though, I had this computer. So, and it still works fine, although once, maybe... 6 years ago, it completely stopped.
And wiped out an episode that we were halfway done with.
It just went bonkers. And I called Apple, and I was like, my computer went bonkers. And they said, well, your AppleCare would have expired if you had even bought AppleCare, which you didn't. And I said, oh, I know, but it stopped working anyway. And the person on the other end of the phone said, are you telling me that you're not satisfied with your computer? And it sounded like a weird...
Can you hear winking? Like the phone sound of eyelashes flowing?
And I said, that's right. I'm not satisfied with the life of my computer. And they said, okay, let me transfer you to my supervisor.
My more empowered.
I went through this whole like winkety wink, like here's what we want you to say. Just repeat what I just said, except back to us. And I sent it off and it came back and it worked.
So you basically have a new computer in all but.
Well, but even the new computer is 6 years old.
It's the Mac of Theseus. But you think it is all mostly the parts of your original computer and they just put a new motherboard in or something?
Who knows? As far as I'm concerned, inside...
You didn't mark it with a hair or a lipstick heart or...
No, I didn't put a little piece of tape over the top of my door. No, I'm one of those like black box people who thinks that inside this computer are two mice and a jellyfish.
Well, that is increasingly who uses all digital technology. Like it's now so widespread that 99 out of 100 users of anything are people like you.
Yeah.
Who don't care...
Don't care.
Who just want it to work.
Why does my refrigerator talk to me? I would rather it didn't.
But we're going to go back to a different time.
When only nerds used computers.
Well, let's go with the middle ground, because I think this is an interesting... When our listener Jai suggested we do a show about this kind of Winamp era, I was a little skeptical. And then I remembered, first of all, I love Winamp. And I still...
still don't know what it
and
is.
And I still use... Winamp.
You don't.
I do. It's on my computer
right
now.
It's from a BBS era.
It is from 1997. Whoa. And it's on my computer right now. You know what else I use almost every day? Word 2003. Because Microsoft changed the Office interface in a big way in the next edition. And so for 20 years, I've been frozen on the last edition. Because I think a lot of this is just driven by middle-aged people not wanting to learn a new interface.
And honestly, it still runs and things run on it?
Still runs okay. I had bought a new one. At some point I went on eBay and bought a disk because I wanted the 16-digit code.
Yeah.
And to run a legitimate licensed Office 2003. Still runs on Windows Vista or 11. What do I have now? 11?
Vista? No. You know, that's what the US Navy uses to
This is not Vista. This is like 11, as I think.
Well, that's the thing. I'm going to tell you this, listeners, but don't send any viruses my way. I won't upgrade past Mac Catalina 10.15.7.
And does this open you up to all kinds of...
Well, what the problem is that increasingly I will want to use a piece of software, and it's like, you can't do that on Mac whatever, 10.15.
I think this is a huge market for people like us who just want our computer to look like it did 6 to 15 years ago.
And every day, my computer, when I turn it on, will put up a box that says, upgrade your operating system? And I'm like, nope. And
you're in a little war of wills.
Yeah. And there's no version of that box that says, don't show me this again. It's just like every day.
This is the closest thing you have in your life to marriage. Every day someone says, do you want to do this? And every day you say, still no.
Nope. But yeah, I'm pretty sure if I upgraded my operating system, it would instantly brick this machine and I'd never be able to use it. But the alternative is I can't use whatever new latest drum machine, you know, like somebody, a listener to the show, Matt Howie, sent me a Universal Audio digital, analog to digital interface.
Yeah.
But I can't use it because it's USB Lightning Bolt 70
different port.
Two, and I don't have, and it won't use my USB.
You so might be able to solve that with some kind of adapter, do you think? Or is that not a thing?
I bet, but as far as my computer is run by mice and jellyfish.
Adapter. Ken, what are you, Tom Swift Jr.?
Well, because then you're daisy chaining like seven different things into, and that just drives me crazy. Because in music, you do that all the time. It's like XLR into quarter inch into micro, into mini jack or whatever. It's just like.
But you were never a hobbyist for that. Like the way some music geeks might
like
be.
A Radio Shacker.
Yeah, like a,
No, if it didn't.
You'd be a terrible roadie.
If I couldn't, I would. If you couldn't just plug it in, I've always felt like, well, that thing doesn't work anymore. And I did have several pieces, the whole business I was in from 94 to, or earlier, from 90 to 2003, it was constantly an entirely new interface, ADAT, and then this, and then that, and all that stuff people just abandoned. And there's like a whole music industry worth of albums out there.
Just sitting on little weird little tapes that nothing can play.
Yeah, well, and they're not on tape. You can't go back and remix them, and maybe there's one guy in town in a basement somewhere who has all the stuff daisy-chained so that he can still read that thing if it hasn't rusted.
Well, let's go back to that transition time when music was going from a disc made of polycarbonate or even vinyl. When music, what did I say?
You said when music was going, but it's not music that was going from this to that. Music's the same, man. Music's just love. Love in waves.
On some level, yes. A very high-level platonic ideal of music was the same. But really, you can't overstate how much it changed everything about music when it was decided that it was a file and not an object that you would make or buy.
Honestly, collect, just a kick display. in my taint.
that's why they did it. How do we get to this? How do we give all these musicians a kick in the taint?
In 1997, you were on the internet?
Oh, yeah. I was on the internet. I was on email, and we've talked about this. I was on email in 1992.
I know. That's so crazy.
I was on, thanks to the University of Washington, go Huskies. I was on the web in... I came back from a Mormon mission only to find that instead of FTP and Gopher, organizations and businesses now had websites.
Who did?
With hypertext and links.
Only nerd businesses.
McDonald's.com existed in 1995 and 1996. And I was amazed. Like a business like McDonald's is on the internet? This is no longer just a place to send Journey guitar tabs?
I think we definitely have talked about this before, and I've probably told the anecdote of sitting in a friend's room and him going, no, look, I can type, and look at this other world. Like, somebody will reply to me from elsewhere. And I was like, whoa, okay.
I was like, 50, all right, Poindexter. I was like 50-50 on whether you're going to go, really, or you're going to go, nerd.
But it was, I could see that it was cool, but my computer wasn't hooked up to the internet until I ever tell you about when I walked across Europe?
No.
I used email on that.
And at the internet cafes?
University of Washington. But internet cafes, yeah.
Those were the days.
Me
and Jason Bourne sitting in internet cafes.
But as I headed further into Eastern Europe, all the internet cafes became gamer salons. Like, they were already playing first-person shooter games in giant rooms full of young men with headset microphones.
So wait, were they ahead of us, or did the West, the kids just had PCs at home, and in the East they didn't have PCs at home yet?
I couldn't tell, but the first time I ever saw one of the, you know, like a bunch of people gaming, it was in Romania.
Your first LAN party was in Romania.
It was, and the guy, and I walked in and was like, do you have internet? And the guy was like, yeah, we have internet. And I said, do you have a computer that I can sit at and use the internet? And he was like, ugh, nerd. Yeah, okay. We'll put you over here in this closet where you can use the internet. And it was like, it felt like a bingo parlor in there.
Because they didn't want you to annoy the first-person shooters. And
well, and the whole room was illuminated with neon light. It was
a pachinko
part. Yeah, it really felt like a space station. And they put me on some, you know, beep, 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 beep.
So in honor of middle-aged guys like us who are using our 10-year-old laptop and our 20-year-old word processor, let's go back to this case of a few things. I mean, the Winamp story occurs at a time that's at a very interesting inflection point in the development of a technology where it's no longer just, we've done a lot of shows about this. It's no longer just for a few Radio Shack guys,
right?
You know, cause we've done shows about that. And there was that for cars and there was that for aviation, and there's no memory of it, but there was probably that for movable type and gunpowder too. Like six guys who are like, you know, if you put in more saltpeter, it does this.
The whole thing about rifling the barrel, that's just newfangled, you know.
And then there's the moment we have today where everybody just wants a black box.
Yeah.
Because it's become so widespread. But there's a very interesting moment in the middle where...
Just to interrupt you, as
I was about to make a point. Yes. So close.
I've noticed now that within the Omnibus fan community, people have started to note that it's become a trope when you and I say, we've already done a show.
Wait.
We've already done multiple shows about
this. So saying that something
is
a trope is a trope?
I guess.
Well, now this will be a trope. Okay. Us lampshading the fact that the trope is a trope.
I love lampshading. What does that mean?
I think it's like a screenwriting term for if you have an implausibility in your plot, you just call it out to the viewer. And you're like, yeah, of course it's weird that these two would both be at the same party. So what we're going to do is we're going to say, have three other characters be like, how are you guys both at the same party?
Yeah. It's like when Bruce Willis said, don't talk to me about time travel. I was like, oh,
problem solved.
That problem. I loved that line so much. I was like, this, you know, I was really dubious and now victory.
But what I'm talking about here is like this middle era where maybe we haven't covered so much on Omnibus, where the technology is established enough that it's clear that it's the new thing. And so you've got millions or tens of millions of users.
Doubtful.
But they're still not dummies, and they still care how it works. Like, there's still a sense that you're on the forefront of this, and you've got the problem, and you're excited for what's going to solve the problem, because you can tell the tech is coming, but not quite where it should be.
Right, right, right.
And that's kind of the Winamp story. And it's also the story of, it's one of the first stories of, like, the maverick company that has the perfect product that then gets ruined just by entropy, by the world sucking and capitalism sucking.
Yeah.
Which is something we didn't predict in the early days of the internet. If you would ask me 10 years ago, hey, is Google search ever going to be bad? Is Twitter ever just going to suddenly be bad? You'd be like, no, these products are perfect and they're perfect in their niche, and there's no way you shouldn't make money off of that. Those are going to be fine.
Now
we're in a time when that's not true anymore.
Was this still like utopian internet when everybody still felt like, wow, this is just, you know, the more people that can add their voices to the world,
yes,
the more democratic it will be.
Yes. And it's a little less related to that because it's more about the end user. This is more about the internet becoming a place for content.
Oh, yeah.
Don't you love it when art is called content?
I mean, I sit around all day trying to dream up content.
I got to make more content.
And that's why I've opened a new channel where I just do makeup tutorials.
I don't think it's malicious to say. I was thinking about this the other day. It's not malicious to say content. It's just the fact that the technology now allows you to make about anything. And so you need a new word that's not TV or whatever somebody would have said 20 years ago, an LP, you know?
But something has changed, I feel, recently, where maybe it's just my, the way that they're targeting now. I just feel like I'm seeing so many people just thirstily creating content.
Gotta make content.
Where there's nothing there. There's just zero there. I watched a thing about somebody saving an elephant that was just three photographs and an AI narrator.
Yeah, AI voice.
And then they went to the village, and it's like, this is a 25-minute long video. What is happening here?
It's very foreign to us because, you know, for hundreds of years, the only reason anything ever got created is because somebody had a burning desire, like, I will quit my job and ruin my life because I need to express this idea.
Right.
And now it's the other way around. It's like, I've got to make 8 things this week or I'm going to get fired or I'm going to lose my influencer followers.
Do you feel like your kids are in that world of, I'm just going to make a living by... I see this all the time with a kid slightly younger than yours.
Yeah.
Where it's like, what are you going to do? Well, I'm going to be rich.
You're because be a YouTuber. I'm going
to, yeah, just make stuff. I don't know what it is yet.
Kids just deciding to be famous.
Yeah.
Actually, it's probably better because kids were saying that in the 40s, but then they'd get on buses to LA and they'd get trafficked, you know? You know, like at least the cute girls now are like probably still living at home when they realize they can't make a living this way.
They're all putting OnlyFans up and making $15 a month. They're still getting trafficked, in other words.
It's a different...
They're trafficking themselves.
But I just feel like the stakes are maybe a little low. Like, at some point, they're going to be, no, you know what, I'm, you know, in 1948, you went to secretarial school. Now it's going to be like, no, actually, I am going to...
Do what, though?
Drive for Lyft.
Oh, I see. All right.
I don't know.
Oof.
Something.
Anyway.
But...
Anyway, Winamp.
Winamp. So I do think, and because it's music related, I thought maybe you'd be marginally more interested than you would be in most other late 90s technology stories.
Sure. I saw this go across our list of
suggestions,
and I was like, I don't even know what any of that is. And you said, I don't like it, but I'll try.
You're not supposed to out me.
I don't like it, but sure, I'll give it a shot. And I was like, it's all gibberish to me.
It was a better story than I remembered because as a Winamp user, I did not know about the technological and then business shenanigans that led to its rise and fall. But it's pretty great. It's pretty emblematic story of that pre-dot-com boom and then later post-dot-com boom internet. So in the late... in the late 80s, early 90s, when the internet is kind of on the horizon only for a handful of nuts, like not even nerds yet, but kind of like you have to be...
Kooks.
Yeah, you got to work for DARPA or something.
Right.
Music and media in any form is not something that can be transferred as a digital file. The Moving Picture Experts Group, or MPEG, doesn't even form until 1988.
No, that's not what MPEG means, is it?
Yeah, that was a... consortium of academics and engineers worldwide that were like, hey, if there ever is a thing, we should have a standards for it.
So does JPEG derive from that, but it's lost its meaning?
Yeah, I think J meant joint because that was a different but related group trying to standardize how images would work. But MPEG was moving pictures. And
JPEG was jamming pictures? Or
no, two other consortia had become the joint.
Oh, PEG. Joint.
Joint so two different pictures. Initiatives have been like, okay, let's get the Europeans and the Canadians in the same room, or otherwise this is going to be a Betamax nightmare.
That's crazy.
And it was really not at all... So yeah, MP3s don't exist. Like media is not something you transfer as a file because there's just not enough speed to do it. As early as 1982, this German electrical engineer named Karl-Heinz Brandenburg, the most German name ever, is like, that's a German.
Karl-Heinz Brandenburg.
That's a German from 1782, but he has time traveled to 1982 and got an EE degree.
Hello, Karl-Heinz.
He's getting his PhD and his thesis advisor challenges him. Like, imagine, like, just as a thought experiment, a world where you could transfer files. Like, what would the protocol look like? Could you compress it? How would that work? And so from 1982, this kid has been thinking, is there a way to do this? And so a decade before it even becomes workable on the horizon, these engineers are kind of working on this problem. And after 10 years, by 1992, it kind of works.
Hmm.
They have, you know, Karl-Heinz Brandenburg and other engineers like him have come up with, you know, bulletin boards are getting faster, modems are getting faster, adoption is getting wider. At some point, people may want to send video and audio back and forth, and we've got a compression algorithm that kind of works.
What's the choke point in speed? Is it just the cabling under the oceans, or what is it?
I mean, at the time, it's that everything's over telephone wires.
Right.
So there's nothing faster. You know, we just assume broadband is much less 5G is just baked in.
That's not true.
You would have to sit and watch a swimsuit lady appear on your computer because it's going over a phone line in squeals and boops.
And that's because there's no fiber optic yet?
Right. Well, there's no fiber optic and there's no dedicated cables.
Except in lamps.
Except in those cool CNMe looking lamps. Except on like new rides in Tomorrowland. And
we
Fantasy
had those
Land.
In 74.
There's no dedicated infrastructure for internet.
I got it. Okay.
And certainly nobody trying to do it on the subway. You know, there's no mobile devices at all.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
So by 1992, they finally, and it's very hard, it turns out. Like, they have a compression algorithm they think is great, and they run it on Tom's Diner by Suzanne Vega, the acoustic one.
Sure.
And
great tune.
The everything sounds great until the vocal comes in, and then something about that being such an outlier, the compression just doesn't hold, and her voice is like,
sure.
And they're like, we thought we had MP3s, and
my computer just did that to me the other day.
It breaks on Suzanne.
It sounded great, and then the vocals, you know, a recording I was making, the vocals came in.
You should put it out.
Come on. This is a 2014 laptop.
Then they found out it actually was working, and it's just Suzanne Vega had been possessed by a demon.
Right.
That's how we found out. But they fine-tune on real audio files, and finally, like files with an F, not a PH. And it finally works, but the problem is nobody is using it yet. Adoption is very slow.
Oh my God, did you just do audio files?
I didn't mean to.
That's smart.
Well, I realized after I said it that I was saying a different word that I did not mean to say.
I had to calculate that for a couple seconds.
Well, it would have worked either way because they probably did use audio files who were like, yeah, no, I can still hear the drums or two.
Oh, see, that's where I come in. All those people who are like, oh, there's too much data loss. What was it called? Loss.
Lossy compression. Well, let me ask you this. Do you hear, like, in the early days or now, do you listen to an MP3 and think, listen how the compression has sucked all the joy out of rock?
No, but I'm bad because I'm the guy that also drinks truck stop coffee and is like, I don't know, it's fine. You know, so I got into an argument with a friend of mine the other day who was like, yeah, light roast Ethiopian is the best coffee. And I'm like, light roast Ethiopian tastes like battery acid. And he's like, you are a dummy.
You cretin.
Yeah, your tongue is made of glue. And I said, no, dark roast that tastes like chocolate bars is the best coffee, especially if it's been sitting all day. And he's like, ah, but, you know, I'll drink any coffee. And the same with MP3s, like, oh, does this sound bad?
You're such a man of the people.
I really am.
You're pretending to be embarrassed, but what you're really saying is like, I'm such an open heart.
Yeah.
That I just want bad coffee and bad compression.
But the problem is if a t-shirt has 20% polyester in it, I won't let it in my house.
Everybody picks and chooses. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think you're right about that. Like, and I'm not using Word 2003 cause I'm like, yeah, any word processor. I'm cool like that. It's really more like this was the peak of Microsoft Office.
Yes.
Why should I use their bloated later versions?
Well, do you remember at some point there was an iPhone that you really bonded with and it was like, this is the best iPhone. And then the new ones just kept getting worse.
I'm that guy. That's why I still use some weird one that it's hard for me to get free on my plan.
Right.
Because I want this size and this screen, et cetera, et cetera.
They were so fast.
Yep.
And then they weren't fast anymore.
Well, the story has that in it too. You know, product gets good and then it gets bloated. Like sometimes you know, it's not true in airplanes. I don't think I'd wish that every commercial airline was flying some 1946 plane.
And the seats were better.
That's true for a passenger. But
who are you judging it by?
Well, I just want
by the monster on the wing.
No, I want them to have GPS, and I want them to have fuel extinguishers on the engines, and I want them to have, you know, aerodynamic rivets, and I want, you know, I just, like, when I'm driving my car, I'm, you know, I'm never like, boy, if I had a 1970 Mercury Marquis, that would be so sweet. Because what I really want is anti-lock brakes and power steering.
No, that's the problem. I was driving a 1979 Suburban until recently, and it's because I wanted, I don't know what I wanted. I but wanted now that to you survive
have,
the apocalypse.
But now that you have anti-lock brakes and power steering, you would never go back, right?
Well, I don't know about that. I mean, the thing is, you know, I outweigh you by 80 pounds. So
it's a weight thing?
An airplane seat is a thing I'm like, why am I in this that was made for a child? And the big truck, too, I always felt like, I don't know, you know, there's so many things that could go wrong, but then my truck kept catching on fire.
This is so insightful. Like, I always wondered why large men have their old things.
Yeah.
And now we know. Large men need old things.
Yeah, it's the only thing that fits.
The efficiencies of late-stage capitalism have pushed them out of their chairs. Knees into their cheeks.
My choir teacher in high school showed up in a car one day, and he was like, I bought a new car. And I was standing in the parking lot, and I was like, why did you get this car? He's like, I tried to climb into six different cars, and this is the only one that I could put the seat back far enough. It's like, makes sense to me.
They should have a special like that. If you can fit in this car, you can have it, drive it off the lot today. Anyway, so by 1992, MP3s exist. I'm not even trying segues anymore.
Sure.
By 1992, MP3s exist, but nobody's using them.
Because they sound bad or because they take a long time?
No, because, again, it's a paradigm shift, and music is still something you buy on a CD and play on a boombox or on your Discman. And the idea that it would go in your computer, you still have to, like, connect six dots. Well, then, then why? Am I playing it on my computer?
Yeah.
Does it always sit in my computer? Is there some way to get the file from my CD to my hard drive? I mean, these things we take for granted today, like ripping CDs was not commonplace. It was hard to buy a drive that would do it.
I was really in that conversation because, you know, I was trying to sell CDs. The whole conversation in indie rock, like, do we sell CDs for $10, $15, $18? How much can we sell it for?
What years are these? That's a little bit later, right? Is that late 90s or is that after 2000?
In 1998, I made a cassette to sell at shows for the Western State Hurricanes. And I always thought maybe we were the last band, 98, 99.
And were you just dubbing it on a double tape deck?
No, there was a company that would make you, you know, 500 cassettes. And we were selling them at shows and people were snapping them up. But other bands were selling CDs that had been, burned by some guy in a rental warehouse out by the airport.
Because you couldn't go to Office Depot and get 50 blank CDRs.
No, and some, you know, people would buy whatever the machine was, and this was a new kind of fly-by-night business of, like, screen printing on some artwork. But all the other bands were selling CDs, and I don't think I owned a CD player at that point. And we were still selling cassettes. And
you didn't own a CD player in 1998?
I don't think so. Huh. Maybe I had one of those Discmen. But every time you jumped off of a stair, it skipped.
It would skip to the next Tom Petty song.
Yeah, I didn't own that many CDs until 2002.
So the moment when that changes, when it goes from a Radio Shack thing that you really have to be kind of one of 10,000 hobbyists to want to have music as a file, is the story of a kid named Justin Frankel.
Are they all Germans in this story?
Justin Frankel is American.
Houston Frankel.
He's as American as can be. He's raised among the mesas and the energies of Sedona, Arizona.
Dun, 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 dun,
which if you've ever been to, really, it's one street through town.
Yeah.
I mean, if you want to experience the vortices, obviously you have to get off that main road. But
property values have soared.
It's not a big place. I mean, somebody's got to run all those crystal and gem stores, fake Navajo stuff.
Sure.
He is your prototypical, I mean, I hate to reinforce the stereotype.
Generalize.
He is a flannel-wearing 90s slacker who has dropped out of the University of Utah after like two quarters because whatever.
Yeah, you know? Whatever, dude.
He was gifted. He's a little bit younger than us, like, you know, maybe 5 years-ish younger than us, a little more for you, a little less for me. That means he had a computer in high school and was very much like, what can this thing do? And
did he grow up with color monitors?
Yeah, he would have had a color. See, he's a little younger than us.
Wow.
So he never played black and white games. He never played Zork on a green monitor. But it did mean there was a little more hacker advancement to consumer level stuff, which meant in high school he could write a keylogger to get his teacher's passwords, which he did.
Oh.
You know, he's like a Matthew Broderick in War Games kind of a prankster.
Right, okay.
And so he's always kind of a, it's clear in the story he's an outsider. He's a rebel. He doesn't like constraints. He wants to see what the machines can do that maybe the man doesn't want you to do and hadn't thought of kids being able to do now that they have the right machines.
He wanted to play global thermonuclear war.
Exactly. And he loves the idea of ripping files, ripping MP3s, the new standard, off of, you know, ripping music files off of CDs and having MP3s on his computer. Mm-hmm. So he has his music on his PC, but he hates all the media players that exist. At the time, you had Windows Media Player, you had Real Player. I mean, for a lot of people, I am conjuring a lost world. You probably never had this, but
Real Player was a thing from here, right?
Where was Real? I mean, I was a Real user, but I don't know if I knew anything about their corporate structure.
I feel like I knew about all these things mostly because I knew people that quit their band and got a job somewhere. And I was like, where have you been? Oh, I got a job at Real Player.
I thought Real was like in the Northeast. I don't know. Maybe. But there were a lot of those here.
Yeah, yeah, right.
So it totally could have been.
Real Networks, that's what I'm thinking.
Oh. Well, Real Player was like an MP3 player for your PC that would actually run in Windows, but it sucked. Windows Media Player sucked. Real sucked. It didn't do any of the things you would want. It didn't even do the things your stereo could do. Like, you couldn't put in a playlist and say, hey, play this mix of my songs.
My stereo couldn't put in a playlist. Oh, you mean a mixtape?
Yeah. Like, oh, I see. You could make a mixtape. You could make a mix CD. If you had one of those weird multi-CD things, you could actually program it to play.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and it would spin the carousel and play a different CD.
Yeah.
Weirdly, there was no software that could do this, even though it's been 5 years since the MP3 is ready to go for consumers. And Justin Frankel is annoyed by this, and he spends a few weeks programming an alternative.
How much of the internet is the product of nerdy boys being annoyed by something?
Yeah, exactly. This kid's 19.
Yeah.
Maybe that's it's what led to a lot of the greatness of the internet, and maybe a lot of what we're now finding out are its drawbacks.
Right, a lot of the tone of the internet is just like, this is stupid, I'm going to...
If it had not been angry teens, like if it had first been like, I was going to say moms trading recipes, but then that might be even more cutthroat.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know. Who would be the who would be the nice people you would want to found the internet? Like
so, I don't know.
Dad's
like,
grilling or...
No, I feel like scientists like working for SETI. Right, like people that are using science, but they also believe that maybe they're going to pick up some radio program from Mars.
Like it's just got to be some moonshot scientists.
Yeah, just
cold
like
fusion guys.
Yeah, kooky scientists, or the guy that you were talking about, Hans Fritz Rubenstadt.
Yeah, Hans Fritz Rubenstadt.
Who I always, when you watch those CIA movies, and it's a bunch of people in tight suits. But then there's one guy in a cardigan who's like, yeah, what we need to do is, you know, and everybody goes, oh, we let him be eclectic because he's such a genius. It's always somebody at MIT who's neurodivergent.
Often in movies, those are older guys.
Yeah.
But in the internet, it turned out those were all neurodivergent 17-year-olds who liked, you know, Dead Kennedys or something. In this case, Justin has just found a new Unix MPEG audio decoder, a way to listen to MP3s, called AMP, Advanced Multimedia Products. That's just the name of the company. It's probably, as you say, a backronym from amplifier.
But is it AMP with two M's?
No. It could be because of multimedia.
AMP.
But it's not. It's AMP. And so he, not even disguising where he's getting his decoder, which he did not write in his... probably using without permission, he adapts it from Unix, an operating system that no one is using off campus, to Windows, an operating system that everybody has on their PC at home, and he makes WinAmp and releases the first edition of this MP3 player on April 21st, 1997.
What is Win an acronym for?
Windows. It's not thank Unix
you.
AMP.
Thank you, thank you.
Windows plus AMP.
I'm playing along here.
And... very quickly, like by it's you know, he's not, by no accounts is he like the world's greatest programmer, but he's really good at, he's just a dog with a bone when he's got a problem he wants to solve. And Winamp is almost immediately a pretty perfect product. Like by version 0.92, it looks like the Winamp that I still have on my computer today.
And was the internet fast enough that you could trade programs?
Yes.
You could download Winamp.
Yes, there were sites where you could get an installer, and it was so small. Like as recently, like by the end of its life, it was still like 1/100th the size or 1/50th the size of iTunes, you know?
The program.
Yeah, the installer itself. So you could just very quickly download Winamp and you would have it. And this is how I got all my software. I was on CNET or whatever trying to see what the new free software was that would let you do this or that or the other. And I think you missed that era. And
No.
I have no fun memories from it because it was more frustrating than exciting.
Yeah.
Because you'd always be like, well, why doesn't this work? Well, what do I have to, why? What driver do I need? Why is this?
I never knew what I would want because what would I want? Winamp.
This guy wants to play music on his PC.
Yeah.
And you didn't even have a CD player. So no, you were.
I didn't want to play music on a record player.
You don't want to play music at all.
Music is driving me crazy. Ken, I know you love a Christmas pickle.
It's my favorite thing about the holidays.
Yeah.
Actually, I mean, there are many good traditions, but boy, playing hide the pickle.
Hide the pickle.
Is really what makes Christmas jolly to
yeah.
me.
Yeah. You don't want a sickle.
It's already festive mm-hmm. for various reasons, including the birth of our Lord, but
it also is green, which is one of the two Christmas colors.
The Christmas pickle is what makes it jolly, in my opinion.
Why are Christmas colors green and red? Is it just holly? A holly has green and red, and it's a Christmassy kind of thing?
That's the only thing that's still green and red in winter?
Yeah.
Probably.
Well, the reason I wanted to ask about the pickle is that we have a new Omnibus t-shirt after many months of no new Omnibus t-shirts. And in the infinite wisdom of the Omnibus Brain Trust, it is a Christmas-themed T-shirt design with a Christmas pickle.
I feel like some people listening are listening with someone who likes Omnibus more than them.
Mm.
And what you should do, if you don't have a gift idea for him, her, or them, mm-hmm. is you should consider, they love Omnibus so much,
mm-hmm.
they're going to be opening it on Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
Why not give them a holiday-themed Omnibus shirt?
I think there are people listening to the show who are headed back to Christmas with their families, and they're kind of dreading it because their families are maybe differently politically aligned from them, and there's going to be uncomfortable conversations around the dining room table where some uncle says something weird.
He's going to pull off your face mask and try to choke you with it.
Yeah, or whatever. Maybe you're the one that doesn't believe in face masks, but you love Omnibus.
I like how you want to make sure those weirdos buy the shirt.
Well, you know, I just feel like everybody's on their own weird trip these days. And what you could do is give every one of your relatives that you're kind of estranged from an Omnibus pickle t-shirt as a form of like weird assertion. It'd be like going back home and your mom gives you a bunch of Christmas presents that have to do with Christmas, that are like Christian, that have like Christian themes. You can give everybody an Omnibus pickle shirt.
It's irreligious, but slightly festive.
It's festive.
It's plausibly Christmassy without being overtly theological.
So your uncles are like opening this and they're like, you know, already the kids have all gotten pickle shirts. And then your uncle opens it and is like, also a pickle shirt for me. Oh, thanks.
Did you get a discount?
And you're going to just be loving it. You're going to be rolling, totally gassing because you have done it again. You've done it again.
This is from our friends at Side Deal. And I think I said Soft Deal in a previous ad. And
and
they were justly annoyed. Yeah. Soft Deal is no, it. Don't go to that website.
Side Deal.
Our friends at Side Deal have designed a cool shirt. And you can take advantage. You can go to, should I give the long URL?
Yeah.
Sidedeal.com/deals/omnibus-holiday-TEE. Or the easier way to do this is to go to omnibusproject.com/store and you'll see a link to the pickle shirt.
Love it. Love it. A link to the pickle shirt. I've been wanting to say that for years and now finally an opportunity. But seriously, this is a t-shirt and, you know, and other items, sweatshirts, presumably ice skates, all the stuff you find at a podcast store.
There is lots of stuff at omnibusproject.com/store, but don't miss the Christmas shirt, because it's a limited time only. You need to order by November 30th, or it won't get here in time for Santa to bring it.
Think how hilarious it's going to be to wear this in July. People are like, what are you doing with the Christmas colors on your shirt? And you're like, Omnibus, Christmas pickle.
Should we sell a red, white, and blue patriotic t-shirt you could wear in December?
There's no season of patriotism.
Is 4th of July in December as funny as Christmas in July?
No, because every day you should be celebrating your freedoms here in America.
There were millions of music geeks out there who were, unlike you, primarily listeners and fans first. And it was driving them nuts that they couldn't play their new repositories of digital music.
Yeah, right.
Now, keep in mind, there's no way to buy, sell, trade, or share this music. So people are having to
steal it.
Yeah, either
they're ripping it.
Steal it. Well, they're ripping it off their CDs or getting it from an FTP server. I remember being a young broke student and like checking out a CD from the library and ripping all the tracks and feeling a little bit guilty because the artist wasn't getting much.
Not that guilty, were you?
But apparently not, because I did it. I kept doing it.
Was it Blur's Park Life?
It was 100% Britpop. It was. That was my rule. I was like, no American artists.
Right, sure.
It's going to be Blur. It's going to be Oasis. It's going to be Interpol.
1998, what was the music that people were listening to? Was it, it's all Creed, right?
There would have been a lot of that. That's not what I was file sharing. I was very excited to get stuff that like was kind of hard to find in record stores. You know
what, like Stockhausen?
Yeah, exactly. That's what it was. And if you turn it off, it just plays John Cage. No, it was like, you know, oh, here's some. I've really heard this old Rhino compilation of whatever rare whatevers is really good, but I've never actually seen it for sale.
I see.
You know, and so I guess
it's like a ziggurat of nerd.
Pretty much. Yeah. And cheapskate, because I could have gone to Sam Goody somewhere and found it for $39, whatever this Rhino collection is. But Winamp looks great. Like by 0.92, it's got a little volume shifter that changes colors, you know, to amber and then red as you get higher. It's designed to look like the front unit of a stereo.
Smart.
That's kind of his innovation. So it's going to have a little spectrum analyzer. Maybe it's got a little window. It's got play and stop and pause buttons. It's got a little window telling you what you're listening to. And very quickly, even though it's that way before version one comes out, very quickly he adds a lot of other very smart plugins. He makes it customizable, so you can have the layout you want. Maybe you want that classic one. Maybe you want a series of kind of bento things where you move in a compartment that shows you the next six tracks on your playlist, or maybe you want a visualization. It very quickly added the thing where you're flying through the music. Which you've seen these, right?
Yeah, sure.
Which I don't know. I mean, having never used drugs, I don't know if that's what it's for.
Oh, yeah, it's totally trippy. That's what it's for.
Is that what it's for? It's for Pink Floyd?
I think so.
You have a laser dome in your house?
I mean, even not drugs, I think there is a connection. There's a synesthesia between certain kinds of music and like trippy visuals.
And maybe if you're playing something for a party or for a girl or whatever it is, or a guy, and you don't want your thing to just be your Windows
right,
five background with a little app up. You want your whole screen to be something a little bit more disco,
like an ASCII rhinoceros doing a dance.
No, but it would be like a rave. It would be like little blue shapes turning into pink shapes when the music wants them to. And
this is after people are using mice.
Yes.
Or mouses.
Yes. This is a late 90s Windows interface.
Okay.
So you're pointing and clicking on a GUI, a graphical user interface with your mouse.
Right.
And it's perfect for this.
It's not like Reason propeller head stuff where you actually can move cables around and patch different like boxes together.
No, but it's a digital representation of that. Like there is an equalizer.
Oh, okay.
So instead of pushing, you know, you can feel like an audio nerd, but you're doing it with your mouse, you know? You can rewire how you want the console to look, but you're just mixing and matching little plug-in pieces. And the mascot for Winamp quickly becomes a llama for reasons that are not really clear. Mike the Llama.
I remember that.
I think Justin actually buys a llama at one point and names him Mike. I think it might all go back to what's the guy's name? Is it Wesley Willis? Do you know this Chicago area kind of outsider artist? Like he was a visual artist, but also like a punk musician because he had kind of Daniel Johnston style emotional problems.
I understand.
He had a song apparently called Whip the Llama's Ass because he had weird song titles.
Yeah.
And Frankel must have been a fan. So from
Llama's not going to like that.
From like when, no, it's PETA's not going to like that. No. But from like Winamp, like 1 point something on, when you opened it up, you would see a llama and a gravelly voiced kind of shock jock announcer guy would say like, Winamp, it really whips the llama's ass. And a llama would be going, meh, would be bleeding in the background.
You're kidding.
Which just seemed like Dada absurdity to anyone who was not a fan of Wesley Willis.
Right. Okay. Sure.
But that kind of made it feel like there was a community. It was a homemade thing you were getting into. You weren't supporting a company.
Yeah, it was an aesthetic.
Very quickly, there is a company though, because within 2 years, Winamp has 15 million users.
But it's still a free download.
Do you know the difference between freeware and shareware?
Well, one of them is free and one of them you share.
Correct.
But shareware is you're part of a network. Where they're, you're sharing with each...
I mean, they're both kind of free in a way. Like, freeware just means there's no costs attached. You don't get the source code or anything, but you can download it with no strings attached. Shareware, you can download for free, but then there are strings attached. Like, I'm sharing it with you, but guess what? If you want the documentation, or if you want to use it for more than 30 days, or if you want to unlock this functionality, you need to send me a payment.
And that's baked into the the way the program is made, or it's just a description of whether or not people like let you have it or put conditions on it.
Generally, it's baked into the program, but not in the case of Winamp. That's what's interesting here. Justin's founds a company called Nullsoft just to make Winamp, and I think it's basically him and his dad. His dad's a Sedona attorney, so he's the one filing the articles of incorporation and the one depositing the checks, because the Winamp deal that Justin comes up with is it's shareware and it costs $10, but that basically upgrades you nothing. Like, Winamp is completely available to you when you download it, but it just says, hey, if you're going to use this, if you like it and are going to use it, send in $10. And you would maybe cynically think no one would do it, because I'm sure I downloaded stuff like that in the 90s and I never wrote it. But he started getting $10 checks every day, like
$10 checks,
paper checks would come in the mail. So I'm sure this is a lot of what his dad, Charles, was doing, was like endorsing hundreds of checks and driving them down to the Sedona First Credit Union, because pretty soon he is making over $100,000 a month.
Whoa.
In $10 checks. You know, he has 15 million users and some percentage of them, 1 in 100, are writing him a paper check like, hey, I love Winamp. I love the llama. Love Mike the llama. I want to give back.
Is this the first instance of that? Pay what you want?
I was thinking about that while I was just saying this, like, because that
became a Radiohead record release template.
And it's kind of the basis for this whole kind of podcaster Kickstarter economy, where
it's 100% if what you want to Patreon is.
You want to restore old Max Fleischer cartoons, or you want to put out a podcast once a week, or you want to revive your beloved YouTube series from 10 years ago. You don't need to find a vice president of anything. You just need to find 1,000 people who will write you a check.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's why Omnibus still exists.
Yeah.
Because we got tired of those conversations with vice presidents.
Yeah, we sure did. It was nice when people said, yes, this is worth $5 a month to me.
It was nice that it was magical.
It was nice.
We just asked like, hey, is this worth $5 a month to you? And by the end of the week, ten to 20,000 had said yes. And we were like, oh, this is still a thing.
Wait, 20,000 people are giving us $5 a week?
Sorry.
What the hell? Where is that money going? I'm not getting it.
The thing about Patreon is it's monthly.
Yeah.
So monthly. It is not a week. It is a month. No, did I not tell you that?
Wait, there's not 20,000 people giving us $5 a month.
But there's a five-figure amount.
Yeah.
It's varied between 10 and 20 historically over the life of the show. Am I doing the math wrong?
No, that's right. You're doing the math wrong.
Oh, right. That would have to be a year. I'm doing the math wrong.
You're doing the math wrong. If it was 20,000 people giving us $5 a month, we would be...
It's between 1 and 2,000, and therefore it's that a year, not a month.
Yes.
That's correct. But yeah, maybe this is the first time that...
Let's have it be 20,000. Wouldn't that be great? I would not... Well, you know, mo money, mo problems.
That's what I hear.
But that's not your experience.
But you want those problems?
You're like, no, more money's fine.
It, my experience is the problems are exactly the same. And if they're Mo, it's because you are actually making stupid choices with your Mo money.
I went to the dentist yesterday and she said, I'm going to put an implant. First, I'm going to do a bone graft. Then I'm going to put an implant. Mm-hmm. Then I'm going to do another thing. And it's going to cost $7,900. And I was like, well, we're not doing that. But if we had 20,000 listeners that were all giving us $5 a month, I would have said, let's do it.
We need a new tier for your teeth.
Yeah. Well, I don't want to. I'm not trying to get anybody to give money to Omnibus out of a feeling that I should stop having a fake tooth glued into my head.
Well, I mean, if of the people listening to this, maybe what did I say? 22,000, 1,000. So it's like one in 20 of you donate to the show.
Yeah. I might have
19 scofflaws right now.
My daughter would stop being embarrassed by me when I show up at her school without a front tooth. So Winamp is maybe the first instance.
It's certainly an early case of somebody making seven-figure income every year just because he said, "Hey, do you like my little dance?" And this does not go unnoticed by the actual
capitalism.com
industry right now, which is flush with venture capital money. Everybody can see this is the future, and maybe early adopters are going to make it. And he starts getting courted by all manner of big tech companies and would be well funded, but not big tech companies.
Those bastards.
Anybody who's got a big check to write. And by June of 1999, Nullsoft is a wholly owned subsidiary of AOL.
Oof.
America Online pays somewhere in the neighborhood of $100 million. So Justin Frankel, still just barely 20 years old, is now not just a millionaire, but a multimillionaire, decamillionaire.
Now, if Justin Frankel, you tell me, if Justin Frankel had retained his autonomy, would he be a billionaire now? Or did all of those initial people get scammed out of, would he have been like the all the people that like lost their shirt?
He does not get scammed because he's employee number one and employee number everything, like except for his dad. And then I think when they're very close to the acquisition, they finally hire a guy who's like, hey, do you know how to do business development?
Right.
I think at this point, we're going to see the sliding doors moment where Winamp does not become the future. And it's going to be AOL's fault. Spoilers.
Now, it just occurred to me that I made a long digression about Ethiopian coffee, and I was not seeing any, you were not registering on your face any sympathy with me, and then I realized just now you've never had a cup of coffee. You don't know what I'm talking about. Ethiopian coffee.
I would say most normal people shouldn't care that much about light roast or dark roast coffee.
Anyway,
just like you don't, famously. It's coffee. AOL at the time is a giant, you know, like a huge chunk of the internet. I don't know what their user base is, but you know, something like a third of Americans literally are newbies to the internet who are using AOL to access the digital world because, well, that's now how you pay your light bill and that's how you keep in touch with your grandkids.
How did you use the internet without AOL? I don't remember. You could just turn on your computer and you were on the internet?
You had different local ISPs, but AOL was kind of the big one that was just mass sending America those disks with a free, you know, you'd get a free month and then it would only be $11 a month or whatever it was. And people were like, well, I got to see what this internet is all about. And they made it very easy. You know, they gave you this front end portal that made it seem like, well, I don't have to be any kind of technician or hobbyist. And they think they can be, as they would put it at the time, and you're going to be shocked by how influential this would make them, the next MTV.
Oh.
They think they can, that big, that much music world influence.
Right. Although MTV only lasted 10 years.
Exactly. MTV didn't know how their days were numbered. But AOL thinks, look, we're how people get online. At some point, music listening and purchasing is going to be online because of MP3s. We need to be there. So without telling the other company in each case, they buy Nullsoft from Justin Frankel, and they now have an MP3 player. And they buy Spinner. Do you remember Spinner?
No.
I don't either. First music streaming service. Very rudimentary, but they have the idea that, not streaming, but internet music service. Like they have the idea that we can serve music over the internet. And they don't tell Spinner they're buying Nullsoft. They don't tell Nullsoft they're buying Spinner, but they just move them all into their new AOL music offices in the Mission District of San Francisco.
What? And these people like walk in with their box of stuff and they're like, who are you?
Pretty much, because Nullsoft at this point is four people. And they walk, and Spinner is 180 people. And even though Nullsoft is actually profitable and has a multi-million user base that people love, they're so much smaller, and Spinner has so much more levels of executive management that Spinner is essentially running Nullsoft, even though Spinner is a very different business that is kind of vaporware. It doesn't exist yet.
Did our guy and his dad move from Sedona to the Mission?
I don't think Charles does, but Justin does with his other kind of early social network friends, whoever it is, his first business development guy and his first marketing guy. And
they lived in a big house and threw paper airplanes at each other.
Yeah, it's MTV's Real World. No, well, they move into this big office only to find that it's this massive, it's what you'd expect, this massive industrial space with big skylights. And none of them want that. They're used to working out of Justin's bedroom. So they set up a tarp in the middle of this giant work area to stay away from these Spinner yo-yos and middle managers. So they're just huddled under a tarp making Winamp.
Oh, that's so grand.
While hundreds of employees are around them trying to mismanage their perfect product and business, basically.
Trying to talk to them through the tarp. Happens.
Because not to give it away, but like AOL proceeds to, you know, immediately mismanage everything about this acquisition. And a lot of it is just, so Spinner's not making any money, but they are running the show. And AOL, even though they say, hey, if we buy these two companies, maybe we become digital music, they don't really know how to do that. And they're very scared of losing their actual base, which is, you know,
grandmas.
Moms and grandmas getting those free discs and starting their business. So
Didn't they buy Time Warner at this point?
This is right before the Time Warner acquisition. They are about to have this giant media library as well. And this is all part of the same strategy. Like, you're going to get all your favorite Warner artists and maybe at some point TV shows, who knows, and movies, but you're going to get them through our media platform, which is going to be Spinamp, if you will. The problem is they want to bill everything through the service, which is what their internal term for their set of financial processes that collects $11 from seniors every month or whatever it is.
Is it still paper checks being mailed?
Well, they don't want people to create a new account on AOL Music.
Got it.
They want everything to run through this vast other side of the business.
I see.
And that makes it virtually impossible for Winamp to do anything they would like to do that might make money, because they don't want to, you know, that's not the correct agile way to start off a digital media service, is running through AOL's massive back end. It's a totally different kind of user. You know, the music geeks that love whipping the llama's ass they do not think AOL is cool. And yeah, AOL's users do not understand how Winamp works.
Yeah. I see. It'd be like if iTunes, you had to sign into some massive Apple.
Except that is how iTunes works.
I know.
Yeah.
Awful.
So everything that's terrible on iTunes. I didn't want to jump the gun. But
sorry,
iTunes doesn't exist yet, but everything that's awful and bloated about it is not a problem with Winamp, which always works and does what you want. So this is the moment when Winamp could have become Pandora. They could have become Spotify. They have the player, they have the streaming service in Spinner, and pretty soon they're about to have the Time Warner library.
And people are getting the bandwidth to do all this.
And it's making money. And people are getting the bandwidth, and they're using that. Well, two things are happening. First of all, it's making money because there are tons of little ways to make money off 10 million new AOL users. You just put little banner ads on, or pretty soon there's a freemium model, which is, okay, Winamp's free, but if you want the super fast CD ripping or whatever, you get Winamp Pro, and that's $20. So Winamp, unlike Spinner, is making a ton of money right out of the box. And MP3s are now the wave of the future, because 1999 is also the year when Napster launches.
Sure.
And we could have done a whole show about what happened to music then.
Well, we still can.
Maybe we still should.
Talk about me being a complainer. That's a whole show of me complaining.
I remember walking into what was that place? The Warehouse? Do you remember that?
Warehouse.
And there was a sign up on the door that said, we're closing next week, and it's because you downloaded music. Like,
home taping is killing music.
It was really, yeah. It was the 90s version of home taping is killing music. And it wasn't wrong. I mean, CD sales were down, but the record companies had been complicit in this. You know, the CD, at the time, the CD music industry had never been more profitable. $30 billion in CD revenues in the year of Napster, and none of them had any interest in digital music because they were making an incredible amount off of selling CDs, and they were terrified that if you could just buy that song you liked on the radio, you would not spend $17 on the album.
Turns out they were right.
They were correct. But you know what? Like, we're about to land on the iTunes model where somebody says, look, if you let people buy the song for a buck, they won't pirate it. And that turns out to be mostly true. And, you know, without having to press the record or whatever, you know, that's actually a reasonable price point.
Yeah, you just want the Britney Spears singles. You don't want to have to listen to the whole record for $18.
But the record companies were terrified. As they didn't, like, for years they hadn't wanted people to, they were so happy when wax singles went away. That's why it was so hard to buy CD singles. You know, if you were the nerd that wanted the B-sides of the Radiohead song or the Guns N' Roses song or whatever, you know, good luck finding those CD singles. So the record companies were really not making it easy to stream music. And as a result, peer-to-peer file sharing and Sean Fanning filled the gap.
Sean Fanning? What's that mean?
Isn't that the guy's name? Isn't that
Sean Fanning. I see.
Is that the name of the Napster guy? Yeah, he's the programmer who was like, you know, if everybody had this on their computer, then you could just borrow it from everyone.
I thought you were saying Sean Fanning was a verb.
Yeah, you got a Sean Fan in your music.
That's pretty good, though.
It's like torrenting. I'm going to Sean Fan this.
Sean Fanning really ruined the industry.
So MP3s are clearly taking off, but nobody in corporate America knows how to make money off of it. And meanwhile, Justin Frankel is an AOL employee, and he is miserable.
Yeah.
His product's not being managed right. He sees that he can improve on Napster. He sees what's – the thing about Napster is there. It does rely on central servers, even though there's, you know, peer-to-peer sharing going on.
But he sees distributed servers?
Yeah, he's like, there's a way to do this where it's 100% distributed. And he writes it, and he releases it. He calls it Nutella with a G, using the computer acronym GNU. And he puts it up on the Nullsoft website and says, hey, music sharers, check this out. And guess who does not like that? His new corporate bosses at America Online.
Right.
Oh, and he's asking for it. Clearly, he's already mad because he posts it on Nullsoft and says, see, AOL can bring you good things.
Oof.
Like,
kicking the knee.
Clearly, our new owners suck, but check it out. Now you can pirate music. AOL is furious and order him to remove that post and, in fact, not to release Nutella from Nullsoft. But the genie's out of the bottle? That's not right.
Can he
the cat's out of the bag?
Can he start a separate company that isn't owned by Intel or whatever the company, AOL?
Well, like one of these guys who already has $100 million in AOL stock, he is happy to just release this for free because that's what he would have thought was cool when he was a kid.
Yeah.
And so Nutella is just let out of the bag with a free open source license. I think anybody can branch it or fork it or do what they want. And I think I'm right about that. I think Nutella's open source.
And AOL didn't somehow shut it down?
I think you can seek for court orders, but people were already working on the code. And so now the legality is it's not an AOL issue. Now it's up to the RIAA. And he's got a plan for that too. When he sees that the record industry is going to start going after the big file sharers to make an example of them, he comes up with a new product, which he calls Waste, which is some kind of underground postal service in, I think, Thomas Pynchon's Crying of Lot 49.
Sure.
So he's one of these guys getting his ideas from sci-fi dystopias. Yeah. And Waste actually is a private, encrypted file sharing network. So not only is it completely distributed, but no one knows who you are, what you've uploaded, or what you've downloaded. And it would basically make it impossible to prosecute any kind of, copyright infringement.
Yeah. They did prosecute some couple of people for...
Yeah, they made an example of, here's 100 super users who are trying to watch Sopranos for free or have downloaded, you know, over 10,000 albums or whatever. I think some people were given fines. Some people maybe took settlements.
Yeah.
He tries to pitch AOL on this idea. Like, you guys should be releasing Nutella and Waste. You'd be the, you know, you've got this old user base that you're, you know, terrified of losing, and this would be a way to get like actual young internet users using your product. And AOL is absolutely not interested in these quasi-legal Justin Frankel joints. He also, he releases on the Nullsoft side a tool that will let you take the ads off of AOL Instant Messenger. AOL also tells him to pull that down.
Whoa.
So he is just bucking for it. And eventually he gets it. On May 28th, 2003, the fourth anniversary, I think, of maybe the Winamp acquisition, of the AOL Nullsoft acquisition, or maybe of Nullsoft's founding, I'm not sure. he posts on his blog, his private blog, that he's done. He says, for me, coding is a form of self-expression. The corporation now controls the most effective means of self-expression I have. This is unacceptable to me as an individual. Therefore, I must leave. So by 2003, he is basically done.
He has too much integrity to continue to let his file-stealing, music-devaluing, like self-expression be controlled by a corporation.
Look, millions of people were Napstering. Tens of millions of people. Probably, I think, upward, maybe it's estimated as high as 50 million people were sharing music that way. And there was totally a three-year gap where somebody could have said, let's get behind music streaming.
Yeah.
And it didn't happen. And it could have been AOL. Like, that totally could have, that's a three-year window where AOL was ahead of everybody. They had Spinner and they had Winamp. And they could have been the face of legal music downloading and sharing.
But they would have had to negotiate with all the big media companies and pay them.
But
right?
As of 2000 or whatever, they've got Time Warner, you know, like they could have become, and that's what it looked like was going to happen, you know, because the different record companies did start putting out their own services and they all sucked. Like none of them were usable. None of them were priced with actual consumers in mind because they were all just thinking, this is for these tech geeks. What we don't want to lose is our mass CD audience.
Right. I remember the first time I was sitting at the merch table after a show. And a guy walks up with, I swear to you, a girl on each arm. And he says, I've got all your records. Sorry, I downloaded them. Lol. And I'm not really interested in any of these t-shirts, but I just wanted to tell you, I love your music. And then he walked right in front of me, walked outside and got into like a BMW 9000 and I. And
that guy could have afforded a hoodie.
And I was like, come on. Come on, man.
I feel like my view on Napster was always the artist's view, which is, and it drives me crazy when people are like, well, of course I pirate. Otherwise it's hard or expensive.
Yeah.
Or, you know, delayed in my country or any of the good reasons why people will tell you they pirate. And I'm always like, you know, the most pernicious thing here is not that you're downloading something on a service you didn't subscribe to or a DVD you didn't buy or whatever. Like the fact is that you're trying to tell me that it's okay. Like that you're a brave hero and iconoclast for pirating. Like, at least be like me and rip this stuff, but know that it's wrong and it's hurting the artist and you should probably go to a show and buy a shirt.
I feel like that's why Patreon became a thing, because the millennials, as they got older, started to feel a little guilty. And we're like...
It was Napster guilt.
I feel like it was. Because enough people said to me, like, well, I stole all your music and everything for years and... Now I feel like I can give you $10 a month.
We need numbers of who supports Patreon and who was on Napster. We need to see if that lines up.
Yeah, because
people atoning for their college age sins, like,
know,
I, like I still
are
am.
40 years old now.
Yeah,
and a lot of them are like, you know, actually, that was kind of a rip.
Well, that 3 year window that AOL had to change music and become streaming music ended in 2001, effectively when Steve Jobs announces the iPod.
Oh, and Winamp didn't.
I mean, there were already, you know, that was how you would now listen to MP3s, and it was not going to be on your computer. And at the same time, I think iTunes came out in 2003, but now there is this big, bloated, awful product that will manage all your music, whether it's on your device or on your home computer, and people just became locked into basically the worst computer program ever written, iTunes.
Well, iTunes did that thing where we had all in that interim burned, you know, ripped from CDs we actually bought into digital.
Some big 100 gig hard drive we had somewhere.
And then you had all this incredible music that you'd collected, all these bands that, you know, had given or you bought their CD at the shows. And then one day iTunes was like, you don't have the digital rights to that. And it all went away. And it was a real kick in the taint.
I mean, the funny thing is, if iTunes was supposed to be the casual user solution that would just invisibly be the black box, why doesn't it work better? Like, why could I never get it to do what Winamp would just do out of the box? Why couldn't it whip the llama's ass, John?
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Think of all the llamas out there who are just prancing around with no fear at all.
Unwhipped.
You know, but that's the thing. Generation X is like, oh yeah, you should whip a llama's ass. Whereas Gen Z is like, why do llamas have to get their asses whipped? Like that's a archaic way of thinking. we should value llamas.
And therefore use iTunes?
I don't know, man. iTunes is such a... I mean, every time I click on it, anything on my computer, it go like it opens music and then I can't control it.
I just love the 8 minutes it takes to even open iTunes because it's updating or syncing some music library or...
Yeah, trying to sell you something. It never takes you where you want to be.
No, I'm like, wait, how come I can't just find my music? Why is the home screen trying to sell me the new Beyonce record or... Yeah.
Yeah. What does For You tell me? Well, I would know if it worked. Let's see here. For You is telling me that I want to discover new music.
There's going to be a 6 minute pause in the podcast while you switch over
says to a different home screen. It's so slow. It's so ridiculous.
Well, guess what? I still have Winamp right here.
You do.
And it's amazing. So, and just to get to the end of the story, in 2004, AOL basically shuts down the Nullsoft.
Where is AOL in 2004? Are they still like...
They're trying to cut costs. the dot-com boom has, you know, has put a ton of companies out of business. AOL has survived, but they are clearly no longer the future. They've decided they're never going to be the music company because that's going to be Apple. And basically, they let everybody go at Nullsoft. The funny thing is, 3 years later... Nullsoft or Winamp still has 90 million users because it's still sitting on everybody's machine and it's still better than iTunes.
You're still using it now.
But most people are not. In 2013, that was kind of the end for those, you know, 90 million users. AOL shut down the Winamp or said they were going to shut down the Winamp website and not support it anymore. And I don't think they ever shut down the website, but support did go away. New versions did go away. And that was kind of the end of a maverick era in software where, you know, the last company started by a flannel wearing teen had been co-opted and was gone. You know, like I think Facebook was already clearly kind of over by 2013. It was no longer
the source,
the cool non-corporate place. And, you know, it was clear by then that everything was going to be a kind of a compromised walled garden.
I just went to AOL the first time I've been there since 2000.
What do you mean by that? You went to their homepage?
There still is an AOL.
You went to AOL.com.
And it looks exactly like BuzzFeed.
People, look, if you host Jeopardy, people will email you from their AOL email account all the time to tell you how angry they are about something.
It's just one after another of these like, oh, can you believe that former NBA star Dwight Howard denies Georgia man sexual assault claims. And then if you go to BuzzFeed, it says 21 people who thought the unusual things their bodies did were totally normal until someone told them they weren't. There's almost no, they look the same.
AOL seems to still think I live in Utah, even though I never had an AOL account. It must have old corporate information about me from, no, man, I was like Gmail user number six
or
something.
You were too cool, right?
But look at this, like all my news stories are like, silver alert issued for Provo man driving south. Well, that's good to know.
Texas toddler becomes youngest person to visit all 63 U.S. national parks. Oh, it's really targeted at 80-year-olds.
If that kid did that without his parents, then I'm impressed.
It's a little girl. Thanks, Ken.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, sorry.
The doctor says, this is my final national park. How is this possible? It's a girl. But the thing about Winamp going away is I think I always kept it on my computer just to play whatever MP3s. I mean, even kind of do-it-yourself DIY nerds don't use it much anymore because like the VLC freeware video player will play any audio format as well. So a lot of people switch to that.
Do you still have access to all those songs that you downloaded, all the Stockhausen records?
Yeah, like every time I switch PCs, I mean, I think a lot of them are on an external drive now, but I could hook up that drive. And often if I get a new PC, I'll be like, hey, this has like a 1 terabyte second partition. Like I'll just put all my music on there.
Wow.
And so I still have a computer with like 9,000 songs that I ripped from CDs that I legally bought at Sam Goody at the mall.
Boy, I don't. Apple ghosted them all.
See? But here's the thing. In 2018, suddenly a new version of Winamp started to appear in repositories and rumors started to circulate. I guess a Belgian company called Radionomy that was talking about launching a music streaming service had decided a cheap way to get in on that would be to buy the Winamp rights and start updating Winamp for people like me. Get Gen X on board. And I don't think Radionomy ever started this music streaming service, but there is now a Winamp version 6.0 that you can download. I think I am not on. I think I'm still on whatever version looks like what I had in 1999. But there are now, for the first time in almost a decade, a new version and work being done on Winamp. It's a zombie software.
Wow. And whatever happened to our protagonist?
Justin Frankel, it's the kind of thing where if you read about him, you know, there'll be, he doesn't do interviews a lot, but there'll be something from, he has a podcast. He created some guitar thing. He must've been a music guy because now he actually, he came back with some jam band, like a distributed file sharing thing, but for musicians, not for music listeners.
Right.
Like a way to jam across.
Oh, I remember that. Connections. Yeah. People were talking about like, oh, this is the future. You're going to be able to charge for your services as a musician because you'll log on and like jam with people or send your tracks through a portal,
Ninjam.
Yeah.
I think pretty early 21st century Justin Frankel joints. He had an effects processor called Jesus Sonic. Mm-hmm. And then he had a digital audio workstation called Reaper, which I think is still, you know, Reaper, right?
What? Yeah. He's responsible for Reaper. That stuff was great. We used that a lot. Reaper.
So that's his new company, Kakos. Like, does he think that's just funny because it has cock in the name, I guess?
He sounds like a real bad boy even still.
Look out. But, I mean, these are all still early 21st century. I mean, it may be the kind of thing where, just like in many fields, you have all your best ideas in your 20s, and then, boy, once you've got 9 figures in the bank, you're a lot less interested in changing the world with your new rebellious Thomas Pynchon meta universes.
I guess that's right, right? I mean, if I had $200 million, not only would I have an implant, but I wouldn't give one good goddamn about anything.
People always say that when some celebrity is melting, you know, Elon Musk, the richest person on the planet, is just stepping on rakes online all day. People are like, if I had 1/1000th of what he had, I would just live in unimaginable happiness and luxury. But the fact that nobody does means that's not true.
More money, more problems.
More money, more
problems. You know, did you see the one the other day where Elon Musk said that he would give Wikipedia $1 billion to change their name to Dickipedia for 1 year?
Can you imagine how annoyed he is? There's one little corner of the internet that still works and is good.
Yeah.
He must hate that.
And everybody goes there all the time. And
you can actually read about his divorces and how much he hates his trans kids or whatever.
Every once in a while, I'll meet somebody who, within a conversation, I will realize doesn't go to Wikipedia 16 times a day.
How could you not?
I'm like, what are you doing then?
What fills the Wikipedia-shaped hole in your life?
But I remembered also the long winters being parked out in front of a venue down in New Mexico or something, waiting for another band to show up before soundcheck.
Yeah.
And they pulled in. It was Carissa's Weird. They pulled in and climbed out of their van and came over to us. And, you know, there's 5 of us in the band all sitting there reading our paperbacks. And one of them looked at us and was like, readers. Like the lowest, you know, readers.
Well, you have to remember that when we were kids, there were a group of kids who read the World Book Encyclopedia for fun, but yes, it was not the average. It was not the median. It was not the median kid. Like, I'm glad we found each other now, but those are the people who are on Wikipedia today, and the vast majority are not going there 16 times a day.
Would you take the $1 billion and change it to Dickipedia for a year?
If Elon gets no electoral, editorial control,
he gets nothing. You get $1 billion, and all you have to do is
and then those little pleas from Jimmy Wales no longer appear at the top of Wikipedia, telling them how much they need my $2.
Yeah,
yeah, I'd do it.
Yeah, Dickipedia, but you know he probably has too much cool kid integrity to do it.
Good for him.
And that concludes Winamp, entry 1433.PR2603. Certificate number 38550 in the omnibus. Futurelings, social media died an inglorious death back in 2023.
Of all the things that got worse on the internet, social media was either already bad or, I mean, it was the thing that was invented to rank girls at Harvard.
Right.
It was never good.
No, it was never good. But there was that brief period, man, of a decade where we just thought it was the cat's paws. And now look at us.
We were hooked, though. Now, in hindsight, we're like, we were just all strung out on social media.
So gross. I'm sorry, I kept derailing you in this episode, and you now we're at 120 minutes, I should have just.
I bet it's an hour 20. I bet it's not 120 minutes.
That was a good show.
Can we be the new MTV if we have 120 minutes?
Do 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 do.
Let's get Matt Pinfield up in here.
Dun 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 dun. You can find at Ken Jennings and at John Roderick wherever, whatever.
Who even knows?
You can email us at theomnibusproject@gmail.com. Gmail, still a company with no faults, still committed to not being evil.
See, Google is the thing that where you were like, these guys had their motto not to be evil, and of course their search is so lucrative they'll never intentionally F it up.
Yeah.
And then they did.
Yeah, they sure did. Just us talking about Winamp, Google's going to throw up some ads for Winamp.
Sorry.
Not even knowing what it is.
Actually, us talking about iTunes probably means you're going to get ads for iTunes.
Futurelings, you can find one another on Facebook or Instagram or where else? Reddit.
Yeah, there's a Discord.
You can find one another. You're out there. And you are going to enjoy one another.
Same, like-minded young people or middle-aged people will always find one another. Yes. Online.
You can mail us things to P.O. Box 55744, Shoreline, Washington, 98155. I feel like it's been a while since we went through the mail. What have you got over there? A bunch of postcards.
Yeah, a ton of postcards.
People have stopped sending us boxes with their grandfather's shoes, and now they're just like...
Inflation meant postage rates went up. Oh. This was our friend Rye, who was in Tokyo and sent a lot of greetings to you, and I must have complained on the show that I was not getting any greetings because... He now sent me two postcards.
That have like woodcut prints and...
This is Tokyo Station, where I actually stayed last time I was in Tokyo, and this is a Hokusai Wave. This almost looks like he maybe got back home to California and then bought these.
You can, that one certainly looks like an airport postcard, but you can stay at the train station?
There's a hotel over on this side here.
Oh.
Where you actually have rooms facing the plaza, and it's this amazing kind of old Meiji era hotel with like 12-foot ceilings. It's amazing. Wow.
It definitely looks like colonial architecture.
Yeah, it's the one place in Tokyo that looks like this. Yeah. I don't know if it got bombed or maybe it got rebuilt. 300 amazing places to eat like directly under your feet in the basement arcade. I honestly think it's the place to stay in Tokyo.
Okay.
Even if Scarlett Johansson's not.
Good note.
Not there. These are a little puzzling. Rai says... I didn't mean to cut you out, but I can send you a postcard too. That one's not puzzling, but this one says, "Hi Ken, from Ryan Tokyo. With me, his mom, Linda." Hmm. It's not. I believe I don't even know who's speaking to me anymore. Is this from Linda or from Rye?
Say what?
Let's see. Josh says, "John and Ken, how many times have you gotten a postcard of a historic building mailed from that very same building?"
It's a post office. It's a picture of a post office.
It is the Ho Chi Minh City Center post office. Cool. In the former Saigon, with some cool Vietnamese stamps, including some kind of fruit bat, some kind of old temple, and Hoa Si Nguyen Song, who died in 1988 and is hard to say, painter, revolutionary, maybe. Choreographer,
skateboard instructor,
maybe a muralist. There appears to be some kind of vaguely Marxist-Leninist looking art behind him.
Maybe we should do an omnibus on him.
He
rated a stamp.
Add one more to that tally. Thanks for all the great episodes. Thank you, Jack. I think I said Josh, but this is clearly Jack.
Thanks, Jack.
I'm not Josh. And let me just open this randomly since this episode's already super long.
It is.
Why not?
Sure.
Let's kill some more time. Nobody's listening now anyway. This is the part where we can say which girls we actually liked in high school.
The super fans are listening.
They know
this is where it all really happens.
Dear Ken and John, you asked on a recent addendum how many of your listeners work for NASA?
Oh! Not zero.
This one has a JPL return address.
Yeah.
What do you think is in here? Mars rocks?
Let's see.
I can't offer John his litter filled with fruit, but I'd be happy to give you a personal tour if you're ever in LA on a weekend.
Oh, it's a JPL person.
We can get a photo with the Mars rover.
Wait, isn't JPL in to Bay Area?
No, Pasadena, I think.
Oh, Pasadena. Right.
Like Ken, I'm a software engineer by training. Unlike Ken, he's actually still a software engineer by vocation. He writes the computer code that controls our page break. Robotic exploration spacecraft. That's awesome, Clay.
That is awesome.
He sent us some pins from JPL's storied history. Did you know JPL had pins?
You mean like personal identification numbers?
Yeah, exactly. You can get into his bank account now. He's like our CTO's pin is 2001.
Oh, like these are like challenge coins, except you can wear them on your shirt. He sent a bunch of them.
He sent like 20 of these.
Hey, be careful with that envelope. It says JPL use only, and I want to keep it for something.
This would be a pretty good... And it's got the old string tie.
Yeah.
You know, the one that you can keep sending around the office. The envelope is as good as the pins, but these pins are pretty good.
What are the pins?
It's the final voyage of the Spitzer. I don't know what that is, but apparently it's no more.
The Spitzer was a Vietnamese muralist.
Project NeoWise, 15 years of Project Grace. These all have code names.
Yeah.
Spitzer Beyond. Was this an Elliot Spitzer campaign button? Because, boy, that didn't last.
No, you know, JPL is always doing the stuff that doesn't get the headlines.
Kepler. So I am going to Google what all of these JPL... Terra. 22.
That means Earth.
20 years of Terra.
Or ground or That's, something.
Boy, if it's true that actually history only started in... Earth history only started in 1991, and we all had implanted memories from before that time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a bummer for example, Donnie and Marie Osmond, who were never popular.
Yeah, do you remember that time when you and your brother showed each other your things?
No, you don't. That was implanted by aliens working for JPL. Thank you so much, Clay, for the pins, but especially for the interoffice envelope that we are going to use for all of our...
Let me see the pins.
I'm passing you the pins.
If I still had a leather jacket, which I never had, I would put all these pins on it.
Half of this episode was already a Patreon plug. Are you going to plug the Patreon again?
I am. One last thing. Remember, all you millennial people that stole music, you owe us.
more John than me.
And so,
since I was the one stealing the music with you.
Yeah. So, you know, what a great opportunity is to send $5 a month to Omnibus for all of our wonderful content, and it actually, you are rewarded with more content, an incredible amount of content, in fact, including pictures of all these JPL pins, which
then right.
you can reproduce.
If you're tantalized by now, wondering what a Spitzer pin looks like.
Oh, look at this cold
Atom Lab.
Donate
to the Patreon, and you can see it in our photo stream.
This says emit. These are all like, I feel like you're supposed to wear these around the JPL, and your boss will be like, you don't have very much flair.
They all have a cool Epcot Center vibe, even the ones that are from like 2021 somehow. Yeah. I guess if you work for JPL, you're like, even we know space was cooler.
New star.
Then.
Yeah, these are great. So yeah, go to patreon.com/omnibusproject. Your generous contribution keeps the show on the air.
At an extremely long length. Listeners, from our vantage point in your distant past, we have no idea how long our civilization survived. We hope and pray that the catastrophe we fear may never come, or else we'll never get to do that Napster show.
Right.
But if the worst comes soon, this recording, like all our recordings, may be our final word. But if Providence allows, we hope to be back with you soon for another entry in the Omnibus.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.